Hello everyone, thanks for attending my talk. It will be about egalitarian computing, why egalitarian. So we with my co-author Alex Birkov are from Western Europe from the University of Luxembourg. So the problem of doing egalitarian everything is very prominent in Western Europe. And this is about how computing should be equal for everyone. Why computing should be equal for everyone? Well, because we're talking about attackers and defenders. The problems with comparing attackers and defenders is that attackers might always have been much more powerful. They have more resources, they are more vulnerable, and even one weakness is sufficient for a successful attack, whereas defenders have to protect all of them. And attackers can spend much more time, so defenders are in a much weaker position and should spend more resources. We can, of course, as defenders, can harden the protection. For example, increase the key length in the critical systems we use. And sometimes try to restrict the attack vector, for example, by limiting the exposure time of a web server, so limiting the number of online password attacks. But this doesn't always work. For example, a secure cryptographic algorithm with a very sufficiently long key is a good solution for quite a lot of protocols, but quite often we just don't have the keys. We have to rely on such an imperfect mechanism as a human memory. And human memory, it can memorize mainly passwords. The passwords are very important instruments. But the passwords tend to have very low entropy. And as a result, brute force attacks become possible. For example, attackers may try to guess a PIN for a mobile phone or for a credit card. The question is, if we have some secret with very low entropy, can we withstand attackers? And the additional problem is that these low entropy secrets are much easier to break on special hardware. So many people really underestimate the power of special hardware. But on the example of Bitcoin, it's very clear that by using dedicated ASICs, one can win up to 30,000 factor in energy costs, which is the dominating of the total running cost of the attack. This effectively means that if we use just normal hardware like laptops or servers, whereas attackers switch to ASIC, our keys, our passwords, our pins effectively loses a lot of security. Keys lose 15 bits, and passwords effectively become three lowercase letters shorter. And pins, if they are just of digits, they lose 5 digits. So we suspect that ASIC-equipped attackers are the threat from the near future. And if we're going to protect from them, we have to design some sort of a set of protocols that would withstand potential introduction of special hardware. So the problem is we have to slow down attackers without slowing down the defenders. This means that we should use the features of x86 architecture or wherever the defense is going on in order to make the switch to other architectures inefficient for attackers. One of the solutions, popular since 2003, is the use of memory-intensive computations. Memory-hard computations, when you use a lot of memory. Because when you want to implement an algorithm that uses a lot of memory on a chip, then the very big proportion of area will be devoted to memory, and chips will no longer become much more expensive compared to just chips that implement the logic. And with large memory on chip, the ASIC advantage will effectively vanish. The question is how to devise an algorithm that uses a lot of memory in irreducible way, and how to use this algorithm in many different protocols. Of course, when we talk about the algorithms that use a lot of memory, this amount of memory cannot be reduced. An attacker shouldn't be able to compute the same thing with less memory at the same cost. That's why we introduced the notion of, we use the notion of time-space trade-off, meaning that if how much the computation time, how much the computation complexity increases if we use less space. And there can be different sorts of trade-offs. linear trade-off means that time and space can be traded equally, meaning that an adversary can use smaller chips but for longer time, and efficiently he could save on the design cost. So linear trade-offs are not desirable. We need something better. We need F to be super polynomial or even better. So one, some earlier works of using memory hard functions for increasing the security of practical protocols is one of our earlier design Argon II, the memory hard hash function, the winner of password hashing competition. So the idea is to, when you hash passwords, use as much memory as you can in an irreducible way. And apparently, after many investigations, the time-space trade-off is sort of exponential. So when you reduce the space, the logarithm of time is equally traded for the inverse of space, so that the time increase is exponential of the space reduction. Another example is the design of so-called EquiHash. It's memory hard proof of work. So the proof of work you know from the previous talk on Bitcoins. The crucial feature of this proof of work is that even though for computing the proof you need a lot of memory, to verify the proof you don't need a lot of memory. It's asymmetric in this sense and with fast verification. The idea inside is the generalized birdie problem. Exactly, you need to find a solution to the tooth of the cake XOR by playing with the different x1, x2, and so on, which are all hashed and XORed together, you should get a zero string. And interestingly, that a proof that shows that you have used 700 megabytes is only 120 bytes long and takes about 2 seconds to find. So interestingly, but not the topic of our talk, that almost any NP-complete problem is a good candidate for memory hard proof of work. The egalitarian computing concept is about using memory hard primitives in different areas. Because, well, the problem, the word egalitarian comes from the original paper on Bitcoin, where it was dreamed that every user will be able to mine Bitcoins on his own laptop. This is apparently not the case. The Bitcoins are currently mined on the huge farms attached to hydroelectric power plants or some places where you have cheap electricity, and apparently only a bunch of people control a huge amount of mining power in the world. So Argon II made password hashing more secure, but apparently with using a lot of memory, you can make other protocols equally secure. So for example, many password-based protocols like key agreement or secret sharing and password-based encryption can be made more secure. Proofs of work can be improved even compared to EquiHash if we use memory hard proofs of work, because they will allow, again, users of regular laptops, regular desktops to mine and be competitive on the market of cryptocurrencies. Even client puzzles for denial of service protection can use a lot of memory, meaning that adversaries with special hardware cannot compute these client puzzles more efficiently than regular clients. So the concept of egalitarian computing ensures that legitimate users and attackers are equal because they effectively have to use the same platform. Well, of course, if you design a special ASIC that has some small computing core and a lot of memory, you can make it very similar to the x86 architecture, but then what's the point? You can just use this regular laptop. So some ASIC advantage will be present still, but it will be much, much smaller advantage. The idea of how we propose to implement this this concept in practice is that if you ever have a scheme where some exact output value is not that important, for example, you have encryption, but the output of the encryption is not that important, it's just important that the encryption scheme is secure in some traditional sense of security, like semantic security against a chosen plate attack, for example, or signature schemes, where you can play a bit with the algorithms and still making it more secure. Then we propose to amalgamate this construction and augment it with adding Argon II computation in parallel or any other memory hard function, whatever your favorite is. The idea is if you already spend some CPU time for encryption, for signing, for verification of signatures, why not use it for why not fill in the why not work in with the memory at the same time? Because it will bring the protocols additional security if they are trying to be broken on special hardware. For example, on the top of this scheme, you have suppose we have some computation which undergoes a series of transformations, like whatever transformations, not hash function, every transformation would work. Transformations H1, H2, like T different steps. And the idea is that you compute a memory hard function at the top of it, and you feed the intermediate values of the memory hard function, its memory blocks, into the computation, XORed here, and then effectively any adversary who would try to repeat this protocol with different values of in and out, so suppose he do some brute force guessing, that he would have to compute this argon2 function or any other memory hard function in parallel. So any chip that computes this scheme would have to contain a lot of memory for this memory hard function to operate. And this can be used in different environments. For example, you can compute memory hard, you can obfuscate the computing by computing so-called memory hard bits when when the original non-obfuscated branch statement is replaced by XORed some bits, which are the bits in the memory of a memory hard function. Another example, a bit more interesting and from my point of view, it's so-called memory hard encryption. So we look primarily at the disk encryption. So quite some time, when you encrypt your own hard drive, the key is derived from a password. The idea is that you would be able to decrypt the hard drive even if you lose computational power if you just have the password in mind. So you'd be able to recover it. The problem is that this encryption is and decryption doesn't take any memory. The idea is just the disk space is partitioned into chunks, and every chunk is encrypted with a standard encryption algorithm, say AES in the counter mode, or the CBC mode, or the XTS mode, whatever. And any attack, suppose the adversary steals your hard drive, then how would he try different passwords? He would take a password 12345, compute, derive a key from it, and then try this key for decryption. He decrypts only a small block of data and checks if the result in plain text has sufficient redundancy. If he decrypts, for example, a Word document or any other documents that has redundancy. The problem is that even if you use the memory hard function for key derivation, this encryption keys can still be computed offline, pre-computed, for example, on memory each device. But the trial decryption can be still done memoryless by taking this pre-computed keys from other machine. And our idea is where we follow Greg Zverucha's earlier proposal from 2015, is that not only the key should be derived from with the memory hard function, but the encryption itself also should use as much memory as you could. Then, if sufficient memory is used, then trial decryption cannot be done without memory, and then the adversary who would want to brute force passwords would have to do it on the same machine, almost on the same machine where the ciphertext is stored. So the idea of Greg was to use the all or nothing transform by Ron Rivest, where the chunks, the data chunks are decryptable in two passes, and for the second pass it must be fully decrypted and kept into memory. And then the memory is inevitably bound to the chunk length. Our idea is to improve on it and use the memory hard function not only for the key generation but in the middle of the process of encryption to make the decryption run on the same hardware and being irreversible. So you can see it on this picture. So here at the top is the memory hard function that is being computed, and here this M1, M2 are message blocks that are to be encrypted. The idea is that you encrypt the memory blocks and use it on some random key and use it as the key stream, encrypt the plain text blocks, and then encrypt them again on some key, password derived key. And eventually you store this random key in the very last block. So the idea is that, and you also feed back the ciphertext blocks back to the Argon2 computation or any other memory hard function computation. The idea is that you can use much more memory because the Argon2 computation is faster than encryption. You can use much more memory than you use for the chunk, and you can make this memory and chunk size independently. And there is no way to precompute either part of it to try the decryption offline. For example, if the encryption is AES, then we can fill 4 or 6 times faster memory than you compute AES. And for example, if we work with 1 megabyte chunk and we can tolerate 1/10 of a second for decryption, then we can effectively use 256 megabytes of RAM, which is quite a prohibitive factor. If we tolerate 1 second, then we can use up to 2 gigabytes of RAM, which would be prohibitive even for botnets. This is not, and our last example is the egalitarian proofs of work. So one example, you have seen already this equihash thing, but it's subject of another work. And our new proof of work is based on Argon2. Interestingly, the proofs of work have to satisfy quite a lot of properties, so it's not easy to build them, even if you have a memory hard function in the pocket. So the proofs of work have to have asymmetry, they have to be hard to compute but easy to verify. They have to be amortization-free, meaning that every next solution should be as much expensive as the first one. If memory hardness is claimed, that the time-space trade-off should be sufficiently steep. Time and memory should be tuned independently. The best algorithms for memory hard functions should have already been found. And also, interestingly, that the progress-free property, that chances to find the solution do not accumulate over time, so that the solution finding is some sort of stochastic process, some sort of Poisson process, where every time you do, every small portion of a second you do a computation, you have non-zero chance to find it. You cannot spend 10 minutes to find proof of work because it would stimulate centralization in among cryptocurrency miners. And it also be ideally parallel and friendly, meaning that if you employ multiple cores, they will not your implementation will not be more energy efficient. Interestingly, that different proofs of work, they miss one or two of these properties. For example, the Bitcoin is not proof of work, Equihash is not so much progress free, and if you employ a regular proof of space, then they don't have that nice trade-offs, and every next solution is not as much expensive because there are several interesting attacks on them. So if you just employ memory hard function for proof of work and follow it with the so-called difficulty test, if you first run it and then apply a hash function at the very end to check for the leading zeros, then the problem is that it doesn't allow fast verification. So to verify it, to verify the first scheme, you would need a lot of memory also for verification. That's not nice. There are concepts like proof of space, where you compute some memory hard function, then compute Merkle tree over it, and the Merkle root determines which memory blocks you have to open to prove that you computed it properly. But there are some subtle things here. So if you supply the nonce for proof of work as an input to this proof of space, then there is a so-called Grindin attack that allows to repeat only small parts of this computation to pass the difficulty test. So suppose you make you selected a nonce, you have made a computation, but in the end you eventually failed with having, say, D leading zeros for the output. Then the idea of the attack is not to recompute the whole thing from scratch, but exploit the fact that not all blocks are opened by this procedure. You can cheat by trying only the very last block until you succeed, and there is a very big chance that this last block will never be part of the opening. And not only the last block, but the block before last would also work. Our idea is to build a similar but more secure construction on the top of Argon 2. The idea is that we select a nonce only after the Merkle tree is computed, and we open a certain number of blocks, like 100 different blocks. The thing is, the parallelism is still possible here, but since we select and open random blocks here, any parallel implementation of this proof of work would have to have a very high memory bandwidth with random access to memory. And this problem is considered to be hard, so even the best GPU do not have a memory bandwidth more than 1 terabyte per second. And we think that if we employ like 100 cores here, then this bandwidth will be exceeded. So we don't think that special hardware would be very helpful in implementing this scheme. And the benefit of it is that it's very fast in terms that if you fill 2 gigabytes, it will take only 1 second because the Argon 2 is very fast in filling memory. So these are several examples of how egalitarian computing can bring more security to different protocols. Interestingly, so it can make it can make six-letter passwords that were deemed insecure before. They can still become secure again if we hash them with the memory hard function and deploy them in the memory hard protocols. The 80-bit keys can be secure again because if we employ them in the memory hard constructions, then special hardware will be no benefit. So, for example, we have heard that the DES cipher was broken on special hardware on FPGA, but we didn't hear that the key was brute forced on a regular laptop or a server. That's still too expensive. So denial of service attacks are also made harder with this concept, and blockchain users can again be regular miners. So this concept, it suffrages a lot of users and make finally the defenders equal to the attackers and make our defenses much, much better. So very similarly to as it happened more than 100 years ago, the concept of egalitarian computing will hopefully bring more security and more equality to regular people. Thank you.
Time for questions. So I'll start things off. So I really like the idea here, and it seems to work well given the current computing economics and availability. The question is there a counter-egalitarian computing where an organization that has, say, many billions of dollars and has an incentive to break crypto, I won't name any particular organizations, could construct hardware that would give them a bigger advantage and then actually have more of an asymmetric advantage because they have hardware that no one else has that's designed around these kinds of memory hard problems? Is there a fundamental reason why that's not possible, or it's just the economics of it?
So could you repeat the question exactly?
So the question is, if the NSA wanted to spend $20 billion trying to break memory hard functions, could they do it?
Well, I think they wouldn't break the functions with $20 million. They can build special, they can build hardware that'd be very close to regular servers, but it will be efficient by a small factor, maybe by the factor of 10 or 15. So it will probably not worth the cost. That's the whole feature. So the special hardware will still be slightly more efficient, but not to the extent that it will worth billions of dollars spent for this purpose.
So is there a fundamental reason why building there couldn't be a design for special hardware that makes these memory hard you're not designing a custom ASIC now. There's a lot of history in building custom ASICs to make straight line computation more efficient. Why someone with enough resource couldn't do something to make large scale memory access more efficient?
Well, no fundamental barrier probably, but if such construction appear in the future, I think we'll
I do not have any inside information that the NSA is working on this. So I think we're safe for a while. I think it makes sense given what we know now. So thank you. Any other questions? So do we have a speaker for the fourth paper? Yes. Sorry.
Thank you, Dimitri, again.